Nathaniel Philbrick thinks everyone should read Moby Dick. It was a seminal book for Philbrick, who heard the call of the sea in its masterful narrative. Need some encouragement? Here's a taste.
The ship dash on, my men, will ye not save my ship? But as the oarsmen violently forced their boat through the sledge-hammering seas, the before whale-smitten bow ends of two planks burst through, and in an instant almost, the temporarily disabled boat lay nearly level with the waves, its half-wading, splashing crew trying hard to stop the gap and bail out the pouring water. The whale! The whale! Up helm! Up helm! Ho, all ye sweet powers of air! Now hug me close! Oh, Ahab! Ahab, lo thy work! Steady, helmsman! Steady! Nay, up helm again! He turns to meet us! Oh, his unappeasable brow drives on towards one whose duty tells him he cannot depart. Oh, my God, stand by me now.
An excerpt from Moby Dick, read by Carl Schmidt. According to Nathaniel Philbrick, Melville's classic Moby Dick will always be worth our time and attention, no matter the age. And in his new book, Why Read Moby Dick, he goes even further.
Yeah, I go so far as to say it's about as close as anything we have to an American Bible. It's as much a repository as it is the story of a whaling voyage. And in there is just so much of what makes America America, particularly in the mid-19th century, but delivered with such a poetic beauty, it resonates in any time. Yes, it's a big, imposing book, but there is so much in there that I think anyone at some point in their lives will find pleasure and real great learning in that book.
I mean, that's the thing about it, isn't it? It's a challenging book. There isn't any question of that. But there's so much of it. It's history. It's realism. It is, as you said, a description of the time and place. In fact, it's kind of a time capsule of New England, isn't it? The whaling industry.
Absolutely. It contains pretty much the DNA of America at that time. And it's being a kind of genetic code. I think it applies to pretty much all times Americans find themselves in. But, it's about a whaling voyage, but Melville is so careful to link it through similes and metaphors to scenes from the interior of the country that it's all there. And as a writer, it's just, I'm continually amazed at just the level of the writing. There's all sorts of kinds of writing, from poetry to parody writing to a short story is inserted in this, and then there's all sorts of Shakespearean drama going on. And so that it's kind of a postmodern novel written in the 19th century, so that there's a real almost experimental nature about it that I think is immensely appealing.
But it's also just a decade before the Civil War, which, looking back on it, makes you realize how much of America he was writing about.
Yeah, he wrote this at a very important sort of historical moment. In 1850, America passed the Fugitive Slave Act, which meant that a slave that had escaped from the southern states to the north now had to legally be returned to his or her slave master. And this meant that the north was now bound to this institution that had pretty much been seen as a local southern problem. And riots broke out in Boston, where Melville's father-in-law was a judge. All the passions that would eventually erupt 10 years later in the Civil War were right there as Melville was writing Moby Dick. And this meant that I think the book has an incredible portrait of a society on the brink of a cataclysm. It's not just the Pequod hurtling towards its encounter with a white whale. This is America hurtling towards the conflict that will ultimately define it in a terrifying and a liberating way.
Of course, the book actually didn't do very well right at the beginning, and it was another cataclysm that brought it to light, I guess. The First World War was what introduced it to a variety of people who saw in it the lessons that he was trying perhaps to teach about the Civil War recurring.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The book dropped like a stone in 1851 when it was published, and when Melville died 40 years later, it was had really sort of fallen off the literary radar screen, and it wouldn't be until the other side of World War I. And I think you're right. The world had to experience a cataclysm of that scale to sort of catch up to where Melville had been 10 years before the Civil War. And so that what you see is in the 1920s, Moby Dick becomes kind of the in book for young writers. In Paris, the expats used it as a kind of litmus test. If you liked Moby Dick, you had the goods. Faulkner, a southern land-based writer, said that the one book he wished he had written that he hadn't was Melville's Moby Dick.
You know, I think if you were to ask most people what they know about Moby Dick, they would probably quote, "Call me Ishmael," but they might not know who Ishmael is. They would certainly know about the great white whale, and they would almost certainly mention Ahab with his peg leg. But in fact, the white whale and Ahab are latecomers to the book,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, you know, it is very interesting. I think it's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to make a movie out of Moby Dick. The leading, most dramatic characters, Ahab and the white whale, come quite late. You don't see Ahab until they've left Nantucket and they're well along, and the white whale doesn't appear until the last three chapters, and it is all a prelude in many ways, this novel. And what Melville does is very carefully, almost meticulously, prepare us for this truly titanic encounter between Ahab and the white whale, and it really ends with a terrific bang, and I encourage all readers that it's worth getting through all those preliminary chapters, because the final payoff is some of the great action writing ever composed.
And Ahab, whom we see as this obsessed maniac, this revenge-filled captain, to his crew, at least in the beginning, has all the remarkable traits of a leader, a compelling, mm-hmm, share-my-vision captain.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the more profound things that Melville gets at, is the unsettling nature of leadership, of great people. That charismatic center is so often based on actual problems the person has. At one point, Ishmael says that all mortal greatness is but disease. And I think that is an essential truth when it comes to leadership. And there is something ennobling about Ahab's quest to solve all the problems of the world, to punch through what he calls that pasteboard mask and try to identify what is really going on in this life. And yet, it's a truly demented quest in which he has seized control of a vessel and is very willing to sacrifice the lives of everyone on board to achieve his goal. And I think Melville is showing us that how morality is so shifty and hard to tell. What is evil? What is good? And there's the character of Starbuck, who is, by all rights, a very decent, good man who is the second in command and recognizes just how crazy Ahab is. And yet he doesn't in the end act to stop him. And is he evil as a consequence for doing that? I mean, it's just fascinating to see what Melville is working out in this novel.
So how many times have you read Moby Dick?
I'm thinking it's close to a dozen. Each time I've read it, it's amazing. It seems like a different book. Not only do you find things that you may have missed, but you know, you change as a reader as you come at it a slightly different direction. And so it's, for me, just been a real important part of life.
Led Zeppelin's track Moby Dick. Nathaniel Philbrick is the author of Why Read Moby Dick? He lives next to the sea on Nantucket.